higher performance and faster and more reliable.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock, episode 218 for Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. Tonight, we're going to say goodbye to Simona in IndyCar, but hello to Martin. Fat chance for the Cutters SFR deal. Mazda to Indy. Juncos rounds out their quartet of Pro Mazda drivers. Rally, Ken Block Stravaganza. NBC All In with the Global Rallycross Championship, and Jacques Villeneuve to the FIA World Rallycross Series. Sports car, the entry list for Sebring and Le Mans. K-Pack stitches their five-cylinder Volvos for some sweet racing machines. And in Formula One, testing resumes tomorrow. RBR praying to the engine gods. Okay, and good evening. Welcome, everybody, to the show. Sean joining you, as I am more and more and more every day, probably to the show's detriment. joining me, I have Mike. I have... Oh, go ahead.
Hi.
I have Doug.
Hello.
And I have the intern, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Who still claims to fame. Who's still hanging on to claims of fame. What an interesting pre-race show. But joining us tonight, everybody, we are honored, as always, to have with us dear friend to the show, dear friend to the site, and what I like to consider dear friend of my own, Mr. Martin Plowman. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, thank you. Welcome back to the show. I'm glad that the Open Paddock World Motorsport Council could hear your appeal. Which has seen the ban temporarily lifted from your fantasy football debauchery to return for a another interview on our show.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I should tell you about some of my recent success.
Okay.
I participated in a friends league this last year. There were 10 people in the league, and I beat someone. I finished ninth.
Oh wow!
So I'm gonna put that on my CV that I actually. Finished ahead of a red-blooded American in the fantasy football league.
Did you employ the dartboard method?
I did.
No. That's good. That's nice.
We've dubbed that the Mulberry defense. I don't know what it means, but it's darts on a board. That's awesome. Well, while we're on the topic, who were some of your stud pickups in the draft, if you don't mind us asking?
Well, I felt really proud of myself. I mean, in the first round of the draft, I was like, you know what? I'm going for what's that dude's name? It was tight end for the Patriots. I can't even remember his name.
Oh, was it the one?
Gronkowski. I was like, he was on the board, and I was like, why has no one picked him? I thought, I'm going with Rob Gronkowski. Boom. And then someone leaned over to me and he said, you know he's out for 2 months, right?
I thought you were going to say that you had drafted the guy who was actually wanted and being tried for murder. So, you know, I don't know what happened there. But that's actually kind of amusing that you picked Gronkowski. That clearly shows, and I think right about that time, no offense, but I would have wrote you off in the league. Yeah. Well, if I could tell you, sir, you should be proud of me. I am currently in first place and over 200 points clear in my fantasy Premier League season, I guess. I want to call it Fantasy Premier League, but that sounds dumb. So
that's pretty impressive. I mean, you know, since I've moved to America, I've kind of lost touch of what's been going on in the Premier League, and you know, I've pretty much turned myself into an NFL buff since I've moved here. And I mean, that's pretty much my homepage on my computer when I boot up the internet now. It's all I read about.
Nice. Well, I think you know, I am beating nothing but Americans who also probably know not much. I know that Spike.
Is that your daughter and your son?
Yes,
your girlfriend.
Right. Oh, yeah.
They probably have David Beckham in midfield, don't they?
Huh?
They probably have David Beckham in midfield.
Exactly. They're like, Beckham, I love him. Put him in the midfield. I'm like, yes, this is working out splendidly. First in my fantasy Premier League, automatically more credentials than David Moyes.
Oh,
yeah, that's sick. Burn.
I thought we weren't going to talk about Manchester United tonight.
Well, we're not going.
No, we're not.
It was only a mention. We can't talk about Manchester United tonight because, like I said, I will start to break things. So,
as no, you're not alone. I can't afford breaking things in this hotel tonight.
Indeed. Well, we'll go ahead and do the beverage roll call real quick. I just told Mike before the show I've taken the Samuel Smith's Organic Chocolate Stout. It is an English beer, English chocolate stout, made in the oldest brewery in Yorkshire. So I figured a British chocolate beer would be fitting for an interview with Mr. Plowman tonight. Mike, what do you drink?
I'm drinking a fine lady beer myself. I am drinking a Shock Top chocolate wheat.
Mm. Look at that. Brilliant. Doug, yourself?
I am having microwaved coffee from this morning.
And you're fired, Shock.
I went ahead. I haven't had Pyramid in a while, so I'm having a Pyramid Snow Cap Winter Warmer Ale.
Excellent.
I will say, in my defense, once I've sucked down some caffeine, I will go fetch me a fine, tasty martini.
Excellent. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into it. We do have Mr. Plowman on the show. His time is valuable, so we'll stop talking about our usual stuff and get into the fact that you, sir, had some fantastic news yesterday morning. It was yesterday morning, where it was confirmed that you will be racing in the Indianapolis 500 for the first time and the Grand Prix of Indianapolis with AJ Foyt Racing, sir. We all here at the site would like to wish you a congratulations first. And second, can you tell us just how this deal kind of came to light, over the off season?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I still have to pinch myself that it's become a reality. You know, as you know, that this is one of the races that I've always dreamed about since moving here. And, you know, of course, it's very top of the bucket list. And, you know, we'll keep trying until we one day add our ugly face onto the Borgwarner Trophy. But really, this all came about just completely out of the blue. As you may know, a few years ago, I went on a trip overseas with IndyCar to the Middle East as part of their Indy 500 Centennial Tour. And there they took drivers past, present, and future. So they had the legends, the likes of Mario, Al Jr., and then the current people, there was Larry and Sarah Fisher. And then they billed me as like a future driver at the time. So I got to spend 12 days aboard in
C-17. Yes.
Thank you for being in the military and for correcting me. So
yes, you're welcome.
See, at least you're useful on this show.
Exactly right. I have found my calling on the podcast, finally. But continue.
So, I mean, like, you know, spending 12 days, you know, on the C-17, and we're flying around the Middle East, and you get to know someone pretty well, and I'm pretty sure that Larry got to know me better than my mom does and knows all the good about me and all the bad about me. So, you know, we developed a relationship from that trip. And then since then, like, he told me that he's been keeping an eye on me ever since that trip. And then my career just took me away from IndyCar 2 years ago. Just, we were on the verge of hopefully doing a full season in 2011, but then it fell through as things tend to do in racing. So then in 2012, I went to sports car racing. But, you know, during those 2 years away, I mean, I was never too far away from the IndyCar paddock and always keeping in contact with the people that I had met along the way. And when I was spotting for Beatrice in 2012, I remember having my phone ready on me, and when one of the Hondas or one of the other engines blew up, I think a Lotus or something, I remember texting Larry straight away and said, "Hey, you got a spare car? You want me to qualify for you?" And we were joking about it, and you know, just from there, I just kept on keeping in with him. And then this off season, I was in the same position where I didn't really think anything would happen. And then I just sent him an email out of the blue. And then next thing I know, I get a call, and he said that he may have an opportunity, and you know, we just took it from there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, your career, your racing career, rather, is something something bizarre, I think. And I think that you're kind of I don't want to say a pioneer for this, but you're one of those guys where, you know, you've kind of had to do the lobbying – to get these rides. And you know, a lot of – obviously the talent's been there, but with the economic recession and everything that was just – you know, motorsport had really kind of ducked out there for a while, and it was just impossible seemingly to get, you know, rides unless you just had loads and loads and loads of cash to just throw at it. And, you know, let's be honest, not everybody is as fortunate as some of the other drivers that come with that funding. But your career, you take starting out in the junior formulas, you come to IndyCar, you know, do a couple races again, kind of get messed up with the follow through on the plans. But then you go to sports car. You enjoy success in sports car with Conquest, the American Le Mans Series. You then move to a full time kind of Oak Factory ride for the World Endurance Championship. You claim Le Mans. You claim the World Endurance Championship in the P2 category. Now it's like now we're gearing up for the Indy 500. I mean, you're kind of one of these guys that we bill as like the big event heavy hitter. I mean, you go to these races. I mean, you go to the Le Mans for the first time, and you take class victory against some very stout competition, and now you're coming into the Indy 500, and you're racing with a good team in the 500 with AJ Foyt Racing that gives you a legitimate chance for a, you know, for what could be a dream result.
Yeah, I just don't know how it all unfolds, and you know, I do have to pinch myself. Know that it is, you know, becoming a reality. Like I said, you know, it is a dream come true, and I just have to thank my lucky stars that, you know, that I've been given this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that at the 24 Hours of Daytona, you were working with Bar One, was it? Motorsports.
That's correct.
Yeah. They actually carried your charity, the charity that you work with often, the Snowball Express, which I've told you countless times. I mean, just coming from that military background, you know, it's fantastic to have people like yourself. I mean, just so involved in making a difference in all of their lives. And you worked with them down in Daytona to put the sponsor on the car and everything. Now, we do have plans now, obviously, for Indianapolis 500 and the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. Is there anything else right now in the works for you in terms of sports car, in terms of maybe trying to get with other IndyCar teams? I mean, what is 2014 right now for Martin Plowman, aside of the great news that we had yesterday?
You know, right now, this is the only thing confirmed, obviously, but for sports car-wise, there's still a lot of things in the air right now. The thing with sports car racing is mostly in Europe, the championships don't really start until April. Mm-hmm. So we're still in the heart of the off season. You know, for the American season, the off season runs from, you know, from Petit Le Mans all the way until January. And if you're not set by December, your chances of getting in a car are pretty slim. Whereas really until early March or mid March, you've still got time to get yourself situated for sports car program in Europe. So, you know, we're in contact with different people over there, and we're hopeful that, yeah, I can position myself to try and get a few races in sports cars back in Europe. But, you know, my main focus right now is the 500. You know, I've been given a golden opportunity, and if I can just make the most of this, then who knows where it could lead in the future.
Now, you're going to begin your testing tomorrow. Well, it is going to be today for most of the people listening, but it's still, I guess, time-wise, tomorrow. You're going to begin your testing in the DW12. Is this going to be your first time in the DW12?
That's correct. Yeah, I've never driven the DW12. So I've been trying to listen in on the radio to Kumo the other day, and listening in with the team on the debriefs and trying to hear what his feedback about the car was like. And speaking with other drivers too. So most of them were saying that there's not much of a driving difference between the old car and the new car. It should be pretty seamless, I hope.
Now, that being said, your time in the LMP2 cars, what kinds of things will you be looking to bring from that sports car and the P2 car, which I think we've talked previously about how they compare to the older Indy car. But what things are you going to be looking to bring in from the Oak into the DW12 as you go out on the track tomorrow?
Now, a lot of things is, you know, with the Oak, you know, they had carbon fiber brakes, And the old Indy car didn't have carbon fiber brakes, so that's one thing that I'm already used to driving with is the carbon brakes. So that's one thing I don't have to learn about. With sports car racing, especially with the tires that we ran last year, it's a lot about tire management and learning how to bring them in properly and how to manage them on a long stint. Because although endurance racing sounds like it's nice and easy and take it steady, 24 hours Le Mans was 24 one-hour sprints. So you really had to learn how to push like qualifying but still maintain that pace over the 50-minute stint. So I think that's one thing I've learned over the last 2 years is how to manage the car and not just thrash it. It's keeping it at a high pace, but also learn to look after the car.
Indeed, indeed. And with working with Takuma and obviously AJ Foyt, proven race-winning car, I mean, what kinds of things are you going to be picking his brain about once you get into the car? What kinds of questions, I guess, have you been asking in terms of that actual driver-to-driver communications? Because I think a lot of times we, on the outside, we see the drivers and we see them doing the hand motions looking like they're in Top Gun or something and doing the whole, you know, whatever the hand motions. What kinds of things are you going to be asking just from a driver's standpoint, Takuma, when you get in the car, when you go around Sebring? Or is it going to be mainly, well, let me get out there, see what I can do, and then maybe start to kind of take in feedback? Because, I mean, naturally, when we've seen your results in the previous series, you were lightning quick in those P2 cars. So what's the plan, man, for tomorrow?
Well, the plan tomorrow, I really just got to learn procedures in the car. I mean, I've never driven a car with a clutch paddle before. So learning how to operate the clutch properly, because they have two clutch paddles, and they were talking about for the standing starts. They were explaining to me how you set the bite point with one paddle, and then you fully depress the other paddle to engage the clutch. And then for the standing start, then you release both. But it's learning how to find the bite point with the one and then control it with the other one. So this is all kind of a new thing for me, and learning how to do that. And the one thing I really want to focus on is not stalling the first time I leave the pits.
Yeah,
Nicole's going to be videoing the first launch, so if I mess up, you'll see it on YouTube.
Oh, excellent. Tell her nice. Tell her to please email me as soon as it gets posted so I can post it on the site, especially okay. If it's a stall, because, you know, naturally I'll do that thing that you see with the fans every time somebody stalls it. You know, they'll stall and everybody's like, oh! heckling from the stands. But, yeah, I mean, it is the first time with these paddle shifting and paddle clutches and everything. And just from trying to listen to what you were saying, I mean, it's already over my head. I don't know what's going on. Perhaps I should not take the Red Bull money for sim racing, but because I don't even know what you're talking about. But it's fantastic to see your career really unfolding the way it is, seeing you being able to accomplish these kind of lifelong goals, if you will, especially with the Indy 500, because I know just personally from talking to you how much, obviously, the 500 means to you, living in Indianapolis, being a part of the IndyCar community as much as you have been, you know, and keeping your chin up and working for those opportunities. Now you've been in the grind, and obviously motorsports is always going to be a grind when it comes to, you know, trying to pick up that sponsorship and trying to get teams to give you an opportunity with your ability, because let's be honest here, you're a driver who should be getting rides based off of merit and skill versus your ability to work the boardroom. You are a proven race winner, a proven champion, and just a fantastic motorsport talent. But how is the environment now compared to what it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago when we were talking about trying to get into IndyCar and then you moving to Conquest? I mean, are we starting to see more opportunities for drivers, or is it just as hard to try and convince as it once was? And how are people really gauging motorsport as that platform to kind of promote their business?
You know, I think the way things are going, it is getting better. I hesitate to say easier, but I don't think there is ever a situation where it's getting easier to get the corporate sponsorship. But I think this year was you know, such a blessing to be given this chance, and you know, it was something that I never thought would be possible. You know, I thought, you know, with the grind and how hard things have been in the past, that it, you know, it doesn't happen like this. It doesn't happen as easy. So for me to get this opportunity this year, I just, like I said, I've got to thank my lucky stars that I've got this chance, and, you know, I'm going to give it 110% and use it and hopefully leverage that to keep the momentum going.
Okay, I have one more question before I open it up to the other boys, because I know I've kind of been hogging the time here. I'll open it up to the other boys if they have questions. We deal a lot with the Mazda to Indy. We deal a lot with some of the younger drivers and even some of the younger grassroots drivers who are just kind of looking for a way, or some of these Mazda to Indy drivers may be kind of, you know, maybe hanging their head a little low because they're just having that hard time trying to get, you know, doing all the things that you did to get into this position. What would you, being a driver, a guy who's been there, done that, but experienced success, even in the face of success, you still have, you know, a hard time with some of the different, just kind of, you know, picking up those rides, because like you said, those rides, I mean, if you don't have something by kind of the end of the year, you're kind of really on the back foot there. So from you to some of these young drivers in Mazda to Indy and stuff, what would you tell them about going through this grind that you're talking about and how it just chews people up and spits them out? I mean, what would you relay to them?
I think the number one thing is to never, never, never give up. That's the rule number one. And I think the second rule is always keep 20 business cards in your back pocket, no matter where you go. As silly as it sounds, during the off season, and you probably laugh at me for doing this, but I took up golf in the last year, and you know, it is a stupid sport. You hit a ball and you chase after it, and then you throw $20 worth of balls away every time you play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do. But, you know, for me, it's a way to go out and to network and to meet people. You know, sometimes you go out and you play by yourself and you get thrown on the golf course with three random strangers. And the amount of people that I've just kind of met this off season that, yeah, maybe they can't write a check, but they know people who do, or they have friends with so-and-so, and, you know, and you just throw them your business card, and you get to know them, and then they become, you know, they follow you, and then it goes from there. So you've just got to get yourself out there and make yourself known and tell your story, make people believe in you and want to follow you, and, you know, try and sell your dream to them, and then they want to become a part of that dream.
Oh, that's excellent. And boys, I'll actually open it up to you if you have any questions, maybe about the Grand Prix or preparations. Anybody?
Well, I have a question about especially about the Grand Prix. Have you driven on the infield road circuit yet?
I have not, no. So
I mean, I know it's under a new configuration, but
yeah. If you exclude driving around, at 9 o'clock at night in a golf cart, but that's
I'll take it. It counts.
Yeah.
What was your lap time?
About 8 minutes and 30 seconds.
No, and so are you going to get any testing time, you know, before the Grand Prix weekend, or is it just going to be show up at the event and see how it goes?
Well, I need to check with the boss, but I think they're going to let me loose at the open test there on April 30th.
Okay.
So that'll be a nice luxury to have, to be able to have a day testing before the race. You know, that's not something that I'm normally used to, so it'll be good to, to really dial the car in before we get to the race weekend.
Yeah.
So, well, Martin, how long do you think it's going to be before AJ Foyt yells at you?
He throws at you.
Yeah. I told him on Twitter yesterday, I said, now you need to be careful. I was like, because if you say the wrong thing, AJ's been known to start chucking wrenches at people.
Spanners.
Yeah, I've watched him slap a man. I'm just saying.
Lane, yeah, so watch out.
I'm saying,
that's just how you know he cares.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah, but excellent. Well, is there any other questions, boys? All right. Well, Martin, I'm going to let you go, but I do want to say that it has been absolutely fantastic again to have you on the show for the short time. I know that you're tired. I appreciate you coming on the show. It's always an honor to have you. And the one thing that I think will stick with me. I think this is going to be one of your biggest and probably most prolific quotes you'll ever have. But I read it on Twitter yesterday, and it was really inspiring, and it really made me feel good. It was just like, you know, all I ever asked for was one chance, and that's nice. It. You know, just one chance. And, you know, buddy, I'm telling you right now that I'm so thankful that you were able to get that chance. And I mean, it's just going to be my expectations for the month of May went from like, oh, I'm going to go to the 500, it's going to be awesome, to like, I'm going to the 500 and I'm watching my friend, somebody that I respect immensely for the job that they do, one of the, you know, class act guys in the paddock, and I'm going to watch him go out there and I'm going to watch him show the world that he absolutely deserves every, you know, and has earned every opportunity that he's been given. And I hope you the very, very, very best of luck, good sir.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I'll take back everything I said about you.
you see, I go out, I try to say something nice, and this is what I get. People wonder why I never say nice things. You know, no, but I'm serious. I'm super excited to see it. I can't wait to come out to Indianapolis and see you. There's some other things that I want to try to get together with you once you're in Indianapolis to do. I think me and the boys here were talking about trying to see if we can get you some time away from your obligations and everything to just maybe treat you to a dinner or something, because you've always been so kind to us here on the show and at the website and everything. And, you know, so it would be awesome to maybe take you to dinner or something and just see how the month of May goes for you, because it's not very often that you get to actually know somebody who's living out a dream like this. So it's crazy.
I'll have to take you out for some fine dining down at Charlie Brown's down on Main Street.
You can take us down there, but I think that we had some other things in the works, so we'll have to see.
I'm ready for it.
It's going to be our turn. It's going to be our turn to treat you. So, you know, you don't have to worry. But, most definitely thanks for coming on to the show. And congratulations as well. I don't think I had a chance to tell you. Congratulations on your engagement, dude.
Oh, thank you, man. I finally had to give in to peer pressure, I guess.
Peer pressure? Wait, what's that noise?
My dad was on my case for the last 2 years, and then Nicole's dad had a gun to my head saying if I don't do it now.
Well, all I know is I know for a fact that Nicole is there at Sebring with you, and you know what? For those kinds of comments, she might be able to offer you some of that AJ Foyt slapping practice.
Yeah, I'm definitely right now.
Get you all softened up and ready.
Exactly. She'll get you nice and broken, and then AJ, you know, he'll just finish you off. So
a few scanners to throw something.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So, but excellent. All right. Well, thank you kindly, sir.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Throughout the course of the last few years. All right. So there we have it. Done with Martin Plowman. Fantastic to talk to him again. Always great to talk to a friend of the show, and especially somebody who's worked as hard and has put in so much perseverance to the sport and really just dedicated himself to IndyCar. Those are the kinds of people that I want to see in an Indy 500, drivers who are great for the fans but also have the credentials to really up the level of talent in the 500. I mean, we're not talking about a slouch here. We're talking about a Le Mans 24-hour winner and a World Endurance Champion driver, okay? So, I mean, this is certainly a huge gain for the Indianapolis 500 and as well IndyCar as a whole for that month of May. Speaking of month of May and IndyCar drivers, Juan Pablo Montoya, as we've seen at the Sprint Unlimited, was not needed to light things on fire. Obviously, Juan Pablo Montoya and the infamous jet dryer incident of a year ago. If you weren't watching the Sprint Unlimited this weekend, which I was not, I just happened to catch this on the YouTube after everybody on Twitter was just laughing their ass off at it. The pace car caught on fire. You heard me right. The pace car, like, literally just caught on fire and blew up.
Yeah, I mean, showing you just don't have to have JPM to have trackside barbecues.
And why I drive a Ford.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're saying, and I saw a report today saying that they were looking at the electronics on the car. Probably it was the light kit that was installed in the car, but that's just me making a guess based off of a headline I saw.
No, that's what I've been hearing too, is it was an overloaded battery in the strobe system.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like
It's a pretty elaborate job to switch a car over to a lighting system like they do on police cars and everything like that. And while you're doing it, anything can happen. This is probably the first run of that pace car with that new light kit. So,
Well, let's talk about some IndyCar news and actually talk about IndyCar versus just Juan Montoya lighting things on fire and making fat jokes about him.
He actually fit in the car.
He did. The dude slimmed down. He looks unhealthy. I seen a picture of him. They were talking about, like, he was pondering in the picture about maybe running in the Brickyard 400. And I was like, dude, you look unhealthy. He's kind of like IndyCar's version of that girl on The Biggest Loser who dropped it all, like, way too fast and looks, like, near death. That was kind of like what
fact. Like.
So, but anyways, let's see. Let's talk about the People's car. We've heard of the People's Champion. Rocky Balboa and whatnot, but now we have perhaps the People's Car and the Indianapolis 500. IndyCar fans trying to get a car with your face on the car in an attempt to raise, what was it, $1 million, Mike?
Yeah, they want to raise $1 million, and if you give $100 to the cause, you'll have your face on the car. And then if they find, 10,000 suckers to give $100, they'll have a seat in the 500. The team will actually have a car. I can't really see this being a huge draw. I mean, I'm sorry, 10,000 people. That's a pretty high demand to get 10,000 people to cough up $100.
Hell, we can't even get 10,000 people to watch IndyCar, let alone.
That's where I was going next. This seems a little presumptuous. Maybe they can get to fly in Indianapolis by going to businesses and things like that and having them, sign up to sponsor, 13 pictures of the employees of the year for the, past 13 months or something weird like that. I just can't see 1,000 people dropping $100 on this. Though it does have Sarah Fisher's team attached to it, this is the Cutter Racing team, but the car would be prepared by Sarah Fisher. So since Sarah Fisher's involved, people do dig deep when Sarah's involved. So who knows? Maybe. I'm just saying signs point to no.
Yeah. So what you're saying is you're being a realist.
I'm saying I shook the magic eight ball and had only had one side of the cube ever.
Kimmy was dominating the other part of the queue. Yeah. With you talking about face on the car, I can just go get vodka and put my face on any car.
It's an interesting idea, but just a picture on the car, $100 is if something else comes with it other than just a picture on the car, maybe. But I can't see people dropping $100 for a picture on the car, but that's just me. Maybe I'm not with it.
My question is, do I get like the t-shirt or like maybe a commemorative coffee mug?
See, how about this? If I give $100, can I, put my own hashtag on the car?
Ooh, like, hashtag Haagen-Dazs.
Hashtag would have been bumped if there was bumping.
Oh, God. Oh, we're such terrible people. No wonder nobody ever listens.
VW did it for free with a bunch of fan photos on Andreas Mikkelsen's car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was at Rally GB last year.
Oh, nice. They get down with that kind of stuff. Those rebels over there at the Volkswagen Group.
Yeah. What else we got in IndyCar, since that's really not a story?
Well, we can talk about the fact that they lost arguably one of their biggest stars when Simona DiSilvestro took the F1 testing role for Sauber. She is now a Sauber-affiliated driver with aspirations. It looks like Sauber is trying to groom her for a potential 2015 race seat, if I read the story correctly. But this year will be primarily used for the grooming of said driver and preparing her to life in Formula One, running some of those Formula One the lifestyle, I guess, of a Formula One racer.
And so, removing her from my fantasy racing roster. Thank you.
Yeah.
I know, right? I'm excited for her, but then I'm like, now I need another IndyCar driver, and who's left?
Yeah, she's great on the road courses.
Mm-hmm.
Simona is now a Sauber affiliated driver, is the official title. It's like, what does that mean? But
what is that? What are you?
She's the reserve of the reserve driver.
Pretty much, but also it means, the Sauber team is, according to what was printed in these articles, they are going to pursue getting her a super license. Currently, she doesn't have one, so they'll get some of the private testing and put her, in the car for some of that to get a super license, with the intent of bringing her out for Friday practice sometime this year.
Oh, that's cool. So, that's really cool.
It is very cool. And you know what? Simona sitting there juggling, offers from Dale Coyne and KV Racing and, there's some sections of the IndyCar grid that you really just don't pick up the phone when they call. If you've got options like going to Sauber for
Formula One, potential
maybe – a potential maybe, possibly, could be maybe in the future sometime might drive an F1 car.
And I would do that over any of that.
Yeah, I think in Formula One we call that the Cosworth end of the grid.
Ooh.
Yes. Yes.
I think she's got a real opportunity there, though.
Oh, I do too.
She's really proven herself.
Sauber seems like a fairly decent team. Got the Ferrari engine. And, you recall that she was at the U.S. Grand Prix this past year in Texas as a guest of Sauber. And the kind of the tie-in there, she's, of the same nationality as the Sauber racing team is. And the lady who is currently the team principal for Sauber, she's been kind of pushing to have more females in motorsport. So, hey, it all kind of works together in a twisted sort of way, and Simona is among the best IndyCar has to offer, with a lot of potential future upside. I mean, we're not going to say she's the best driver in the IndyCar field, but she is a female driver, which has a lot of cachet around the world.
And she's no slouch. It's not like she's tootling around there at the back end of the grid. I mean, she's had some really strong performances. And I think with Sauber, okay, you're with Sauber, you're not at risk of winning a World Driving Championship, right? I think that an occasional Grand Prix win is not out of it's not out of the realm of possibility, and definitely it's she should have ample opportunity to score quite a few points.
We don't even know what the season's going to hold or what teams will do well or won't do well because of all the radical changes. Sauber could be at the front of the grid for all we know.
That's true.
Sauber signs Adrian Newey.
Yeah, exactly. All of a sudden, Simona looks like a genius.
Maybe Sauber got the aerodynamics right, the angle of the dangle's correct,
Oh my god.
Thanks, Doug.
Oh, wow. The angle of the dangle.
You're welcome.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that is a is trademarked. I do collect royalties on that phrase.
Actually, I think I just came up with our first 2014 racing season T-shirt idea.
Oh, my God.
Put like the front end of one of the noses and just put angle of the dangle. Yeah. Somebody will buy it. Mark my words.
I would buy it.
See, I told you. Okay, so IndyCar Media Day today in Florida. It looks like we've got a few announcements, news coming out that Verizon is all but a done deal for title sponsor for the IndyCar series. We talked about that last week in detail and what that would bring to IndyCar. Also, it looks like we have standing starts going to be happening at the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach.
And at Indianapolis for the Grand Prix.
Yes, at Indianapolis for the Grand Prix. And we will also talk about the fact that Race Control will now have – they're looking to essentially create a mobile Race Control, vehicle. I don't like a command vehicle.
Yeah, maybe similar to like a television production truck, you know. What they've come up with is for 2014, they've bought a bunch of HD screens. They're going to have multiple screens so that they could get multiple camera angles and higher resolution, which amazing that it hadn't happened before this. But it took Derek Walker coming in and saying, I can't see anything. Maybe my eyes are old, but this is standard def. What the heck? Yeah. But then also, moving forward to 2015, their desire is to set up a mobile, you know, race control center of some sort so that they could just drive it up to the track and plug it in and be ready to go instead of having to set up at the track.
Mm. Okay. Well, I mean, I think, you know, naturally that makes sense as a good thing because, you know, one of the things that IndyCar's kind of prided themselves on is their safety team. Now you have your race control vehicle, and I mean, you can really just – the logistics are a little bit easier. And again, working with Verizon, which we assume will be the title sponsor, I mean, Verizon just has that technology that they can provide to get you those better looks, to get you the good cameras. I mean, haven't you seen the commercials? Verizon is doing things like scraping oil off the ocean floor. Surely they can put together a race control truck, right?
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. See, I think I know what's going to actually happen. They're not having new televisions. It's just going to be a bunch of Verizon-enabled tablets. And as long as you have the Verizon network, you can download the IndyCar Race Control app.
Yes.
And you can be part of Race Control. You can vote on the penalties.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. That's hilarious.
Actually, did you see – no, a segue for just a second because it's actually funny that you mentioned that. We're not talking about Daytona again. I know. Sorry. No, there was a really great Shakedown episode that just came out on the YouTube where they actually talk about the fact that IndyCar, you know, he was pretty much differentiating three types of racing that are vying for control right now. You have the technologically yeah, this is brilliant. If you don't check it out, Shakedown talk on the YouTube.
Friends.
Huh?
Slash Drive. That's
yes.
The name of the next drive
well,
network.
But
yeah.
They've got a variety of shows, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Shakedown
with Leo is fantastic.
Yeah, Shakedown with Leo. Leo was talking about the three different types. You had the technologically advanced P1 cars. You had the show cars like the Global Rallycross and IndyCar, which he literally came on and said, I don't even know where to put this series at. I don't know if it's like technologically driven or show driven. Clearly, he hasn't watched enough races because it's show driven. And I mean, and I forget what the other one was that they were talking about. There was three.
Did, NASCAR, sports car, rally, GRC.
Yeah, he talked about everything.
Formula One, and I think that was pretty much it. Oh, and they talked about the like gentleman drivers.
Yes,
and,
gentlemen grassroots. How could I?
Grassroots. Yes.
And it was just interesting that you mentioned that because IndyCar, with all these different things and all these tablets and all these, the way that they've been operating, I mean, it's much more about the show and not about the competition. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting build into what we were talking about with IndyCar and now having these like race control enhancements and standing starts and how can we make the show that much better? And, you know, I just think it kind of takes away from the competition aspect of it, really. So, but yes, sorry, tangent. Tangent complete. So shall we talk about the IndyCar testing updates, Mike?
Sure, why not?
Now that we've got confirmation that Sir Plowman will be in the car, in the AJ Foyt car tomorrow.
Yeah. Just an aside, Sebastian Saavedra was announced for sure to be driving a KV car. We were talking about that on our previous show. Because it had not been announced when we had actually recorded that show, but it has been announced, and yes, he was, you know, declared for the seat. Other things of note, we've got Brian Herta Autosport. They're testing Jack Hawksworth on they tested him yesterday and again on Wednesday at Sebring. So he's had some previous tests in the past with Rahal Letterman and Dale Coyne. As far as we know, it's just a test for now. They have not confirmed any sort of sponsorships and everything of that nature. And we're still waiting to hear. If you recall, Luca Filippi has also been mentioned for that seat. So something's going on.
You know, I fully expect Hawksworth to land somewhere. It's just who's going to be willing to take the risk on crash damage?
Ooh.
And you know, no, I mean that fully legit and honestly, you know. In testing, I think you'll find Hawksworth is lightning fast. In qualifying, he'll be lightning fast. In a race situation, he has shown himself to be a little overly
Diesel
aggressive,
esque.
Shall we say? Well,
Diesel-esque.
Well.
Early years.
Yeah, early bees. Yeah, he's he needs a little tempering, and I think he'll be an excellent IndyCar racer. But right now, I think whoever signs him for this first year is probably looking at a fair number of bent parts.
Well, we shall see.
To which Dallara says, "Yay!"
Right, profits right. But up. I mean, you know, so. I'm wondering how much that is part of the decision tree, you know.
Well, we shall see exactly what that how that all unfolds. Especially, I know that there are a lot of still young drivers. Some people touted highly as being exceptionally talented. Maybe some guys needing a little bit more time. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Only time will tell. Let's see. Is there anything else that we got to talk about here in the testing section?
Let's see. Mike Conway's not in Florida this week. Kind of surprising. He's going to be in Italy testing a P1 sports car.
Nice. Toyota.
Yeah, the speculation from from NBC Sports blog is that this is a Toyota hybrid.
Well, I thought that was a done deal that he was going to be in that car as one of the drivers for the World Endurance Championship season.
Yeah. He has a full season for the World Endurance Championship LMP2 with Millennium Racing.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. So I thought he had a full season ride somewhere.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it with the whole dealio with testing this week. Yeah, you know, I was talking with a buddy of mine who follows more F1 than IndyCar, and I was just letting him know, you know, yeah, IndyCar's testing here, and they're testing there, and, you know, they got this going on this week, and it's like, they test a lot. It's like, yeah, they test a heck of a lot more than Formula One does.
So. That's a true statement. Yeah, Formula One not really in the business of testing, and much to their detriment, I think.
much to Red Bull's detriment.
Yes, much to Red Bull's detriment. I mean,
flaming cars.
Flaming Renault. I don't know how to say it in French, but it's bad. Mm-hmm. So, well, let's get into the Mazda Road Indy, Doug. It seems as though you have a pretty good list of things.
Well, it's a long
you have
list.
20 seconds.
there it is. Okay. Anyway, so back to normal. I have my normal allotted little flights of time. Anyway, the first announcement is that Anderson Promotions has a partnership now with Replay XD, the GoPro competitors. Guys make these little. Little adventure cams, and they're a little smaller, a little lightweight, and I think they're going to be on just about every car on the grid in all three of the Mazda Road to Indy series. So Indy Lights, Pro Mazda, and USF 2000, they're going to have a move of the race, I check YouTube after every race. There's going to be a lot of on-car or, you know, in-car footage being captured in the Mazda Road Indy. That's pretty cool. And that ties in really well with something our IndyCar guy, Eric Hall, posted earlier today talking about YouTube and how, you know, content on YouTube is really becoming fairly important in terms of driving your viewership and driving the attention for your sponsors. And so, there was conversation that he was having on Twitter with Pemberton JP IndyCar and Matt Archuleta and Steve Steve, I'm sorry, I'm gonna butcher your name. Jarzombic.
That guy.
S.E. Jarzo. Yeah. As Kevin Lee calls him. All of them are great guys. And if you come to any of the races, especially the Indy 500 in May, be sure to check up some of the tweet ups. We'll be posting more about that because I think there's a group that's getting pretty organized about having some pretty fun tweet ups at all the races, and especially Indy. But anyway, they're having a conversation about this, about what really are the core viewers, where are they consuming some of this, and YouTube came up, and this deal with Replay XD, I think, plays very, very well into that notion that a lot of your consumers or a lot of your audience is not necessarily going to be consuming media on broadcast, traditional broadcast television, or even cable outlet television, NBC, SN.
Because they're not willing to pay $90 a month for NBC.
I don't think it's just that.
That's part of it. Not all. Yeah.
I think one thing I think I see about a lot of the open wheel racing, versus the NASCAR types and whatnot, and it's similar with rally. The followers of that sport tend to be a little more technical minded.
Mm-hmm.
They do. It's just part of it. I mean, for me and the rally coverage, I can't count how many people are IT guys like me or into also pilots like I am or whatever, because they like that technical aspect of the sport. And that's the same kind of thing I seem to find with open wheel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. And, it's just the nature of the way your audience consumes media. So I think this is a great move, and I think it'll do a good job of elevating the visibility of the Mazda Road to Indy. And speaking thereof, we keep getting more and more driver announcements coming in. USF 2000, we're looking at a bunch of announcements coming up. About the Winterfest rosters. Pabst Racing is coming with two. We had already talked about them. Austin Cindric and Will Owens had already been confirmed with Pabst. They're going to be at Winterfest. J Motorsport is bringing three to Winterfest. Heinrich Ferusa, we've talked about him before, a strong driver. Colton Herta and Adrian Starantino, and so they'll be going down to NOLA here this weekend, right? It says when Winterfest starts. And in Pro Mazda, Juncos Racing is now back up to four cars. This is something that we mentioned as a possibility last week, that Spencer Pigot was likely to sign for Juncos. He has, and so has Kyle Kaiser, and that brings Juncos Racing back up to their traditional quartet. Promasa is looking strong. I'm excited. Will they be back into the 30 car count grids that they were a few years ago? Probably not. But they'll be in the high teens. We're already at I think 12 right now, and you can bet on at least another half dozen signing, I think, before before St. Petersburg. Hargrove, who won the USF 2000 championship last year, he signs with Cape Motorsports again, a team with whom he won the USF 2000 championship. He signs for Cape in 2014 for Pro Mazda. So, you know, I think you've got some really heavy hitters. You know, Spencer Pigot coming to Juncos, fighting with Scott Hargrove with Cape. That's gonna be a fierce battle. I'm looking forward to that. And speaking of Winterfest, mentioned that we have these people getting ready for it. It's this weekend. There's 2 days of racing at the New Orleans Motorsports Park NOLA, and that's February 21st and 22nd, followed by a couple of days at Barber Motorsports Park on February 24th and 25th. Each day, or each of the pair of days, USF 2000 is going to have 3 races, and Pro Mazda will have 2 races. So there will be 6 races total in the 2014 Winterfest for USF 2000, 4 races total for Pro Mazda. And at both venues, the Indy Lights guys and gals will be doing testing. So, all 3 rungs of the Mazda Road to Indy Ladder represented at Winterfest for the first time, and USF 2000 and Pro Mazda in competitive form. And that's all I have. I'm going to try my best to keep up with Winterfest this weekend. Saturday is going to be a challenge. I won't be able to check up on that until after the podium celebration at 100 Acre. Because, of course, this is the weekend, Mr. Weitzel. 100 Acre Indeed. Wood. Getting excited. Come in.
Indeed.
If you want, might as well dovetail right into that. So that's, I guess, leaving Indy Light, Mazda Road to Indy, and heading into rally coverage. Guys, 100 Acre Wood this weekend.
Woo! I'm excited. I'm really excited. You know, I'm especially excited because Josh Tons, our sports car guy and fantastic photographer, is going to be down there with us as well. And he's going to be getting the images of the cars on stage, more of the competition type of images. That's going to free me up to work on a project that I've been wanting to do for a while, and that is really focus on the experiential story. What it's really like to go and spectate and be a part of a rally weekend. And I'm going to see if I can't document that well. In with Mr. Tons doing the more journalistic competition heavy lifting, that's going to free me up to hopefully be a little bit more creative and bring a different story from the weekend.
Interesting.
I guarantee I'll be on. I guarantee I'll be on video this weekend saying it was better than Cats.
Wow. Amazing. So, yeah, we may not have Mike on the show next week as he may be arrested. Ladies and gentlemen, we've lost Mike Weitzel.
So long as he doesn't get nutted by Ken Block coming by at full speed around the corner.
Golly, Bum, I still feel that. Goodness.
That was hilarious.
Dude, that dude can do anything in a rally car. Donuts, Gymkhana, bag people from 100 feet away. I mean, what the hell?
He's
man?
Coming around. He's coming around full sideways. Oh, there's that peach and cat. Bing!
It had to be, man. I crutched over, man. I was like a man down in the woods. I was like, help! Medic! Corbin!
Always
somebody!
Turn away!
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get a good shot because I was at a good angle.
apparently for the cars. So was he.
Yeah, apparently he was at the perfect angle, and it just didn't work out.
And now you know Pariah was standing on the inside of the turn.
Shut up.
Yep.
I wanted to get the shot, like, so if he ran off or was, like, coming off, I could get the shot of him, like, right before I was struck and killed, I'm sure.
Right. Exactly. Nice.
But you know what? Posthumously awarded the photo of the year. So, anyways.
Well, it's going to be heck of a stacked field for you guys this coming weekend. You've got David Higgins, of course, there, and Antoine Lestage or a Snowdrift. But, yeah, Ken Block will be there. This is one of only two events that he's going to be doing in Rally America this year. And Travis Pastrana is going to be there as well. It looks like it's going to be dry. A little bit of wet stuff beforehand, but should be dry for the actual race weekend. So it won't be covered in snow and be Snowdrift 2.0 like last year. So you should have high speeds and big jumps and should
lots
be quite the event
mud.
To watch.
Lots of mud. Yeah, I was going to say.
You won't churn up that mud. Yeah.
Well, cause it's
you're
going to
want to be you're going to want to be on corner entry, not corner exit for viewing, just simply because the mud. Oh, yep. It's going to be bad.
Yep, yep. Yeah, it's,
so I take it doesn't drain very well over there.
Well, I mean, it's no. It well.
I mean, how many inches of snow do you have on the ground right now, Doug?
None now.
Well,
none.
Most of it's melted.
Yeah, we saw some pockets, but it was 65 here today.
But I'll tell you what, the grass is fully saturated.
Yes.
And the mud is, in fact, mud. It is my kids' shoes show me precisely how much mud exists because of that. So you're not too far off in your assessment on the level of mud there, Mr. Weitzel.
Well, and we're supposed to get more rain before this weekend. Friday and Saturday is supposed to be dry, and I'm thankful for that. Although I'm bringing my rain gear in.
Thursday is supposed to rain pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. And so, man, I'm leaving the snow tires on the Focus. Let's just put it that way.
Now, I'm wondering what conditions-wise is supposed to get down to freezing overnight, isn't it? It's supposed to be clear but cold, and then it's supposed to warm up during the day.
Right.
So if it crusts over and gets kind of icy, the early stages should be really, really quick before everything starts to mud out, right?
Well, no.
Especially the early runners on the early stages.
Well, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, no, it's not going to freeze that hard. You know, it's
Just barely below freezing?
Right. When you know it takes a lot to develop a genuinely hard crust, you know, where you're going to have a more solid stage. And you know, keep in mind you're also going to have photographers getting into place, running up and down the stage. You're going to have local traffic before they close it, and then the sweeper cars. So the first competitor won't be the first person out, right?
Yeah.
And Friday night, the low is supposed to be 31. You know, it's so...
Okay, so it's just barely below, yeah.
Right. You know, Thursday
night... Your frost line's going to be about an inch.
if that.
Exactly.
You know, so, no, I don't think frosting is going to be an issue at all. I don't think that's in any way a consideration. It will just be a complete mud fest. And Mike, I think you're exactly right. You know, you'll want to be inside at the entrance, I keep thinking of the Rolla Triangle.
Yes.
And,
spectator zone B.
well, this year I think it's designated G, but it's that same stage that they run every year. It has that nice hairpin with the gaping maw of death right there, and right where you'll want to kind of track out, right? And anyway, you know, I think of where they put the spectators on that stage, and there's going to be some really muddy people.
it makes me think of the night at the short track when you go there and the track's nice and saturated and heavy, and they put the cars out there. The cars roll around a bit to do engine warming, but nobody lights tires up. Then they come out for hot laps, and there are always those people who have never been there before, and they're like, "Wow, look, those seats up close are open." And they get down there, and they light those tires up, and the next thing you know, the bottom 20 20 rows of the bleachers are covered in mud.
Awesome. Have you ever seen a Gallagher show?
Nothing like it. What's that?
Have you ever seen a Gallagher show?
Yes. Yes.
I can see some people out there with the plastic. Woo!
But there's always that one guy, you know, that one guy who just he comes in and you know he's been there before. He's got the goggles. Yes. He's got a hanky to put over his mouth. And he just walks down there and he sets up his chair and he puts his seat cushion on and he kicks back and he puts his hand over his beer and he just smiles. You
know? Let yes. him go, boys. Let him go.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, you're Mr. Shaw, you're right. This is going to be one stacked field. I mean, we have all three of the big hitters mm-hmm. coming. You know, Kim Block, Travis Pastrana, and David Higgins. Is Lestage going to be there as well? Are we going to have
Lestage
all
Lestage is going to be there.
Wow.
It's going to be all the open class heavy hitters.
Now, there is one little bit of caution with Pastrana and the fact that he still has a broken foot. Although I don't know that ever slowing him down, but that is the one thing that – although he might just wedge it on the accelerator. I don't remember which foot it is. But anyways, he is still recovering from a broken foot. Whether he'll actually take it easier or not, I don't know. Yeah, that is one to watch out for to see how he does.
Has he ever taken it easy?
What's that?
Has he ever taken it easy? Ever?
No.
No.
Hell no. And the thing is, he smiles the whole way through it. He could roll the car 8 times, pop out, and just be laughing.
And, you know, yeah, that's it exactly.
And you love him for it.
Exactly.
And I think that's why, you know, he is a sponsor's dream come true. Because of the interaction he has with the fans, regardless of how the event turns out. You know, I remember, Mr. Reitzel, Mr. Peachin, were you there when he went off in the culvert there at the Super
yep,
Special?
Yep, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we interviewed him after that and talked to him for a while.
Yeah, yeah, bent his control arm. And, you know, afterwards, you know, if you had asked, you know, a number of other people, if I had been in that situation, I would have been like, piss off, kid. And, you know, he was still his normal, chipper, smiley, happy, outgoing self, you know.
He was talking about foam pits and motocross.
Yeah, exactly. I still remember that because we were waiting to talk with him, and there's a guy talking with him beforehand. And he's like, my son's into this, and he's wanting to do this foam pit. And Pastrana is sitting there going into the details of, okay, what you want to do is you want to get the 6-inch foam blocks. Because if you get the 4-inch ones, when you land, you go straight through them and you go down to the bottom. And if you get the 8-inch ones, you just bounce off of them. So 6 inch is a sweet spot. Get the 6-inch blocks.
Amazing.
He's an amazing individual. And, you know, that's one thing that's just awesome about the sport in general is, you know, the fan access in rally is unlike any other form of motorsport.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Completely unlike. I mean, you can just walk right up to the guys. You know, there might be a little bit of an exception for Ken Block in the fact that, you know, he has such a swarm of people. He does try and talk to people, though. When they, you know, have him there ready to sign autographs, I've seen a line a mile freaking long, and he just stands there, and he'll take pictures, and he'll talk to people, and he'll take as much time as he can. But, you know, he really enjoys actually talking with the people. It's just kind of overwhelming at that point.
You know, Park Ferme, you know, you can tell he really enjoys that interaction. He is always smiling. He's always engaging. I got a nice shot of him and my wife. From when we went, I think it was our very first year of going to 100 Acre Wood. And you're right, you know, he does enjoy that. Or, you know, if he doesn't, he does a very good job of engaging with the public, you know. And so, yeah, even someone like Ken Block, you know, you have amazing you have a level of access in rally that you would never get at any other top level professional motorsport.
Definitely. So I'm going to go a little bit more into the different classes here. So obviously we know what's going on in the open class. Any predictions?
Okay.
Is Locke going to be able to get back into the winning ways there, or what?
Well, I was going to say, if Locke finishes, Locke wins. Mm-hmm. But that's the key.
I'd agree with that assessment.
That's the key. I mean, last year he was lightning fast until he hit the fence post. And then the tree stump.
You know, so. But again, last year, it was also Snowdrift 2.0.
It was.
And
it was very
before, it was a more traditional 100-acre wood, and he was just blazingly quick.
Well, and this year isn't going to be your traditional dry gravel.
It'll still be slick, but you'll still have high speed on those, you know, open, flat areas.
Right. It'll be different, though. It'll be different. And, you know, and anyone else who follows rally knows, mud can be tricky because you can have no grip at all until all of a sudden, bam, you have an abundance
of grip. You hit gravel underneath. Exactly.
And all of a sudden, you know, the balance of your car shifts and you're completely unsettled and sideways. And so, you know, mud is so challenging. It is so challenging because you're it is this, you know, every tenth of a second you're assessing your grip level and the feel of the car and it can change so dramatically in just that split second.
What'll be interesting to see is who's good at adjusting their notes for the second pass.
Yes.
Because those were the guys that are going to be really good at being able to, okay, I know in this corner I'm not getting any bite and it's going to be slick. The next corner, it looks like it's going to be slick, but I actually get a little grip out of it, you know, and they can adjust those notes on the fly. And I think that'll be key.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed, you know, this is, you know, Wally, complete noob talking out of my ass here. But one of the things that I've noticed on the Patterson Rally stages around the house here, especially right now, it's super slick, right? Is that you can get a situation where you're coming into a turn and the entry to the turn is you've got nothing, right? You've got absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden, right in the middle of the turn, bam, it hooks up and you have mad grip, you know, especially if you're using a little bit of the ditch.
Ah, yes, ditch
hooking. And so you're exactly right. I think that second run, the people who are cognizant of thinking each turn, not thinking of it as a unit, but, you know, thinking of entry, apex, track out, you know, those three sections of the turn. Where do I have grip? Where do I not have grip? How do I adjust my line coming into that to maximize points where I do? You're right. I think that's going to be absolutely critical.
And to add to the complexity of that, you know, the open class cars always run first, obviously, because they're the fastest. Mm-hmm. And so their second pass is going to be after everyone else has gone through. So they've got to anticipate what the conditions will be. So they might feel a grip in one way, you know, going through it on their first pass. But then the 50-car field of everybody else has gone through, you know.
Yeah.
And they've got to anticipate what those conditions might be like then.
Mm-hmm. So I have to consider, well, how is this going to be different after it's been rutted up?
Yep.
Yep.
So that'll be rather fascinating. So yeah, I think you're right though. If Block doesn't bend it, I think he's got the advantage. Even though there are the max speed limits, you know, set by the sanctioning body. But yeah, I think just Block just has a little bit of an acceleration advantage, even in the slick stuff.
I will buck the trend, I will say that I think Pastrana will win.
Ooh, gonna go for Pastrana, not even Higgins, huh?
Not even Higgins. No offense to the guy, obviously. So, but yeah, I'll go.
Well,
with
you know, okay. Maybe we've got a little bit of a Ogier versus Loeb kind of situation with Higgins and Pastrana, right? You've got the guy that loves being on the edge. Versus Higgins, who prefers to be like Loeb in the fact that he likes to be at that 95%, right? He doesn't like pushing the limit too much because that can cause something bad to happen.
Yeah, that's a
great comparison.
So
you might be right there.
But no. Yeah. Hang on, though. Mr. Peachin,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to demand that you defend that. Explain your reasoning.
Well, the reason behind it is obviously I think that his, you know, he's not completely went away from rally. I mean, granted, it's not stage rally, but it is a he has been driving on loose surface with the Global Rallycross. He's no stranger to the Subaru. He's got factory Subaru equipment, which is obviously the best in the business. And I just think that given his performance at 100 Acres years past, granted there has been a slight break, but I think that if the car can stay together for Block, he will be tough to beat. But I think if there was to be a driver aside of Higgins, I think that Pastrana is something tells me that Pastrana is going to come out, and I mean, he's focused back into rally cars, and I think that he'll put on a show and surprise some people, and I think I'll pick him to win again, because Subaru is going to want to, you know, really push him along with Higgins to achieve the best results. And I think that he's just got a little bit over Block. I think it might be something mental too, because if you look, Block always had a hard time beating Pastrana on stage as well, just straight up. I think that Pastrana is a better.
Before his experience with the WRC and learning how to make proper pace notes and all that stuff. So I'm not going to agree with you on that, but okay.
I'm still going with it. I'm still going with Block for the win. Or not Block for the win. I'm sorry. Pastrana for the win. My fault.
Now, you know what this is going to require, right?
A bet.
Oh, well, no. It's going to require Mr. Weitzel getting out there on the Super Special and in front of that culvert posting the sign that says, "Here be dragons." So that Pastrana doesn't go into it.
Nice.
Nice.
I'm expecting Pastrana to do a backside rodeo on the Super Special.
Or off the cattle guard jump there at Ollie.
Nice.
There we go. All right.
Well, you know, we've been talking about the big names, obviously, in the open class, but by no means is that the only classes that are running. Moving on, Super Production, I think, is still another one of the greatest classes in Rally America, mm-hmm. because the cars are basically factory cars with some bits on them for Rally. And of course we got David Sterix, who has now committed to the championship, where earlier in the year he said he wasn't going to, up against multi-champion Lachlan O'Sullivan. So, you know, that's going to be a great battle there. But now that we're also on this gravel surface, Dylan Van Way really showed his speed New England, I think it was his first time in that Subaru there, and he was freaking quick. And it is a Vermont sports car based Subaru WRX that he's got there. So I'm not sure who's going to end up coming out on top on that. Obviously it seemed like Sterix had the advantage going into the slippery surfaces that are snowdrift. But you get on these stages where you get up and faster out at 100 Acre, you might see the young guns start to really make a push towards the front there. You've also got Nick Roberts, who's last year's Rookie of the Year. He's got Rhiannon Gelsomino as his co-driver now, and with her experience helping him with pace notes and whatnot, that could be key. And of course, Evan Klein, who ended up third in the championship overall last year, so for Super Production. Gosh, it's going to be a great field to watch those Super Production guys. So don't turn your eyes away once Block and Higgins and those guys go by. I think there's going to be some good action there. And of course, in two-wheel drive, that's where we're going to see that the epic back and forth. Matthew Johnson in the Scion ugly little red box ended up winning at Snowdrift because of the issues that ACP had in the Fiesta. Got stuck in a snowbank. Obviously, no snowbanks that they'll be worrying about here. So I don't know. Who do you think is going to come out on top in the two-wheel drive between those two? Tough one, huh?
Yeah,
you know, the turbo of the XD might really have an advantage, but I don't have a feel for it,
to be honest.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right in the fact that I think this is the first, more traditional, it's a specialty event, Snowdrift, right?
Right.
You got all those slick roads. The second run through is almost like glare ice with the, orange cars
are
gone. And you got no studs, right? So here you've got these wide open, these guys will be on the rev limiter. What's that?
I said, there's there's one particular spectator run or spectator area where you get to see the cars run. I think it's spectator location F this year. I'd have to look at my maps. But one particular place where you get to see them running at pretty much top speed, you know, top gear full out in. Oh yeah, you're right. You're gonna hear them at the end of some of these longer straightish runs bouncing off the rev limiter. I don't know how much the turbo is going to be beneficial at 100 acre versus versus some other courses or some other rallies where. Acceleration out of a corner is more well.
You know, with it being muddy, I think the being muddy actually takes away the advantage of the turbo.
Oh, absolutely.
Because your acceleration out of any corner is going to be somewhat undermined by the slippery nature of the mud.
Right, and you're constantly going to be modulating that throttle, trying to manage your grip level and wheel spin coming out.
Right. So really it's going to be, you know, once you're up and getting up to speed, you know, between that and your top speed, how much of a difference is there going to be between, let's say, the R2 and the Turbo XD? I don't know if it's going to be such a huge difference because once you do get the revs up, there's plenty of power in that Fiesta. So and with a sequential gearbox that it's got that's well proven, you're right. The advantage might not be there.
And – you know, I would like to say that the R2 has the advantage, just, you know, being a Ford guy. So I'll fully admit that that is nothing but pure, you know, Ford fanboy prejudice.
But it's ACP driving, and I know your opinion of him.
Well,
so
you know, okay,
I contention with you, right?
You know, here's the thing. It's been a few years, all right? It's been a few years, and the last couple of years that I've been watching him, he's interacted with the fans very, very well.
You know what? When I talked to him, it was freaking brilliant. If he had the time, he would have just kept on talking to me for forever. It was actually great. And
I will freely admit that first year, maybe it was just a bad combination of circumstances that set me against him. And so this year,
he cut in the hot dog line.
Did cut in the hot dog line.
Of course, it was a bad combination.
And I'm still agitated about that. I'm still agitated about that. But I'm going to say this year, I'm going to look at it with fresh eyes. And next week, I'll give you my verdict.
Well, I do want you guys to stop and say hello to Danny Norcus, who's going to be the co-driver for the number 165 Subaru. It's in the open class. Ryan Wilcox will be the driver. He's from Idaho. He's the guy that I talked to you guys about it wasn't last year, it was the year before, when he was at the then super dusty – they had the rain or the fire danger at the Olympus Rally. He's the one that the car rolled over again and again.
Oh,
and
yes.
They kept on going. Yeah, he was the co-driver in that car. And then later that winter, he was the one that was the co-driver in a car doing the Mount Hood Rally that there was a left five into deer.
Nice.
Oh yes,
I yes.
didn't put deer on the on the face notes. Yeah, I do remember that. That was brilliant.
Yes, so Danny will be there. So he's actually leaving tomorrow, I guess, to head out to start doing some practice out there for the 100 Acre Wood. And he's actually an Air Force guy. So
yeah,
there we go. Yeah. So make sure you guys say hi to him while you're out there because, he's an awesome guy. And, boy, has he been through a lot as a co-driver. He's always got a smile on his face and works hard at it. So it's cool stuff. All right. So that's it really for our 100 acre preview, I guess, that we've been talking about. Although there was a little bit of a mention of a rye on rye and double bastard. What's that about, guys?
Oh, yes.
choice beverages.
Yes, I am bringing something I promised Mr. Weitzel to bring to Mid-Ohio last year, and I could not track it down, and I got it as soon as it was released by Boulevard Brewery, our local brewery here in Kansas City. A magnificent brew, a rye ale aged in rye whiskey barrels, and it is, it is so nice. So I've got 4/5 of rye on rye from Boulevard that I'm bringing down.
12% each.
Let me just say I'm glad that that Park X
Josh Tay
on. Well, yes, I'm thankful for Josh.
Thankful Josh Tons can be taking the photos because yours might be a little blurry.
Well, the competition photos, anyway. But no. Thankful that Park Exposé on Friday is going to be in the afternoon.
Every time.
Saturday Park Exposé might be a little rough.
What better way to chase a 8-hour drive than... Yeah.
And so tell me about this double bastard. I'm kind of curious.
Arrogant bastard, but it's double.
Nice.
Ooh.
So it's going to be nice and potent.
Really, really
arrogant. Oh, it's good stuff. It's been a while since I've had it, though. So I was down in Cincinnati and found a bottle of it. Had to get it.
Nice. Well done.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good time. I wish I was going to be there, guys. One of these times I got to fly out there and check it out, but not going to make it this time around, sadly enough. But we did mention Ken Block, and so kind of moving on with the news there is Ken did finally reveal his full-on 2014 schedule, and boy, he's a busy boy, isn't he?
Always.
You know, he to start off with, he announced that he is going to do, of course, the entire Global Rallycross Championship. That was expected. He's been a key investor in it, as Tanner Faust has been, in trying to make that sport grow. Pastrana has been trying to be a big part of that as well. And, you know, these guys know that it's got the character, if they make some improvements anyway, to really be a big showpiece for rally cars, even if it's not stage rally. So that's going to start out his schedule. He's going to be doing all those events. He is going to do a couple of stage rally events. We already mentioned he's going to be 100 Acre Wood. The only other Rally America event he's going to be doing is going to be STPR, which is the end of May. That'll be just before he heads out to X Games down there in Austin, Texas. Then he's going to switch out and he's going to have a pretty big break there other than GRC events and then go all the way up to over to Spain to do the WRC event in Spain. So
yeah, that'll be interesting.
Which is interesting because, you know, I don't normally see tarmac as his favorite surface, but it's kind of a mixed event there in Spain. So that'll be cool. And then he's going to actually do the Monza Rally Show, which is a regional event there. That'll be pretty cool. And then he's going to actually try and do a few of the World Rallycross Championships. So they got the thing, the WRX, that they're now starting to do. So the World Rallycross Championship, he's going to hit the Norway event, France, and Turkey over there. So he'll be just traveling all over the globe. And, of course, there's the Gymkhana Grid stuff that he started. Which is going to be touring the globe there as well. He's only going to be attending the one in Japan and in Madrid, but that's always a good promo stuff for his brand. And holy crap, that livery on his car! Ugh. If you didn't think it could get more
chaotic.
Okay, it does.
Yeah, it has an 8-bit flair to it with those white lines all over it that are kind of pixelated looking, and then it's got a wheel infill this year in the front wheel.
Yeah, that's interesting.
red, white, and blue color scheme on the wheel infill. Yeah, it's go over to his Hoonigan Racing Division website and take a look at the car. I don't think it's as striking as some of his past liveries, but, you know, it catches the eye and it stands out from everything else. So that's what they wanted to do.
So that'll be Ken Block. I wish I could have seen him over here at 100 Acre or at the Oregon Trail Rally again, but unfortunately I'll have to miss that. But somewhat to my benefit, I'm going to be able to see him in one of the Global Rallycross events because they finally released their entire schedule. Now, not the specific location of the venues, but they did release a Red Bull Global Rallycross schedule. And guess what? It's going to be on NBC Sports.
No. Fantastic. It's going to be on NBC Network.
Correction. You are correct. It is going to be on NBC Network.
CNBC!
you're right. It is going to be on the main NBC, except for the X Games, which is ESPN, of course, has the rights to the X Games stuff.
I was blown away when I saw it was going to be on – it was going to be on network television. It's not on the cable.
Not
it's NBC.
So the NBC network, not
Yes.
Not
which
N.
Is an affiliate, not so a cable channel.
I thought you meant an NBC property. And so my first thought was CNBC.
What also lends to me to say, hey, National Guard, I told you that that sponsorship money.
You did.
Global Rallycross is going to be on NBC, bro, and your series that you sponsor is going to be on a network that nobody even watches. So just saying, I'm not a business pro, but I'm saying that, you know, maybe if you would have done a little research, I think that you could have got out of this a lot cheaper
and get better coverage. You're hit the nail on the head there.
Just saying. On we go.
I'm sorry, and not be attached to a team with a driver who's going to whine when he loses.
Ooh, it was always somebody else's fault, right? Or the car.
Pretty much. And now you've got money to back up your daddy's car, and there's no excuse except you.
That's huge news for
No, I mean he's a talented individual. No, I'm serious. He will find a way to blame somebody else.
Yeah, indeed.
Oh, doing that. There we
Graham
go.
Rahal, I snatch defeat from certain victory. I can do anything.
Ouch. Okay.
That whole Ganassi Racing deal was really cramping my style. I was never going to get a chance like Tony Kanaan got.
Or that Kimball got?
Yeah, right. That Kimball got. Thank you. That was an even better shot.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's look at Mr. Kimball.
Yeah, so yes, again, Graham Rahal is probably never coming on the show, and if he does, it's going to be funny to listen to us backpedal. Graham, thank you for coming on the show. We're so happy you come join us.
Back to Global Rallycross Cup.
They print it.
Sean's okay with this talk. I mean, he's National Guard. He doesn't care.
Oh, whoa. That's a slap to the face.
National Guard. Army National Guard, dude. You don't care about the Army. You want the
goodness. Yeah, you're fired. You're an Air Force guy. I've never done it before,
you're fired. I mean, Air Force.
If you call an Air Force guy a National Guard guy, you might as well just kick him in the nuts.
I know, right?
He just did.
Verbal kick in the nuts right there.
Mike, I know it's okay. You're a dear friend, but I still have to fire you for the first time ever on actual live radio.
I will support Sean.
I can't help it, man.
Mark it on your calendars. I support Sean in this decision.
I know, and this is another thing. Doug never supports anything. He's the one. He's always the one coming on telling me that I need to have a breathalyzer attached to my Twitter handle.
That I do agree with.
So, you know, I'm just saying this is a groundbreaking day here at Open Paddock. You'll have to excuse us. We don't know what to do with ourselves. So, no, it's okay, Mike. I understand. It was a joke, but you're still fired.
Okay.
He's like I'm like four beers in. I don't even care anymore.
So we were talking about rally, weren't we?
I think we're talking about a little bit of rallycross action, yeah. So, like I was trying to say, the specific locations are known, but the the cities are known, but the event location is not known as far as, like, if they're going to use any existing tracks or anything like that. And one thing that we talked about a lot last year, and you know, I hope they're taking to heart this year, and it sounds like they are. I had some Twitter conversation back and forth with Christopher Leone, who's their social media guru for Global Rallycross. And one reason why they chose these locations is because they think that the venues will be better purposed for a track construction that will be more competitive and not the the dive into the first corner and whoever comes out survives and wins the event that we saw last year. So we're definitely hoping for better track design for 2014. So just kind of go through them real quick. The very first event that does make it global, I guess, is in Barbados. But what makes it awesome is the Top Gear Festival.
Oh, nice.
As in the BBC
The British Top Gear, the proper people.
The proper Clarkson.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
So you could not have a better opening for GRC than to have frickin' Jeremy Clarkson and the gang. Oh,
the
man.
Hamster. Series.
Mocking your series.
The hamster, yep.
Well, that's Captain exactly Slow. What's going to happen, right?
No, what's going to happen is at the Top Gear Festival, there's going to be slight modifications to the rules package for GRC,
right.
And they will all have to drive around with a caravan attached to the rear.
I approve. Awesome. I approve.
And the Stig will be added to the driver lineup.
Nice.
All Global Rallycross cars will be replaced with school buses.
Chained school buses.
Yes.
Can't get any better than that.
Saturday night at the dirt track.
Good stuff. So yeah, that's where they're starting out. That'll be May 24th. It'll be tape delayed for that one.
Wait. May 24th?
Yes.
Isn't there something else going on
Saturday.
May 24th?
Saturday.
It's Saturday, May 24th.
Yeah, so that's night. They're going to try and compete with the night before the 500? The Maserati
Indy? In the afternoon.
1 it's 1 to 2 in the afternoon Eastern time.
Why not? That's they're right competing. When they're competing with the practices, right?
Yeah, they're competing with the people leaving from the parade driving home.
Nice. It should be
I went and saw the parade once.
That's
once.
Enough.
Yeah.
And isn't that what CRs are for? I mean, seriously.
Eh. So, anyway, I kid. But, no, that's I still don't think I'm going to be able to catch that, but I'll definitely have to set the DVR to record that.
So round two is going to be the X Games at Austin. So I guess, you know, I thought the later on, I guess there's an event in LA, but I guess there's only one X Games this year, I guess. So yes. I thought they were going to do maybe Austin and LA for some reason, but I guess Austin is it, but they are going to be making the venue out there at the Grand Prix track. So at COTA.
Circuit of the Americas.
Yep.
And I'm crossing my fingers. We're working hard to make this happen. That our new SCCA and Global Rallycross photographer, Stephen Cook, will be able to go down to COTA to image that for us. Really, really.
Oh, that would be awesome. Okay. So that'll be in June, June 7th. Then the end of June, we got Washington, D.C. What an interesting backdrop. And that'll be live from 2 to 3 p.m. I don't know where in the hell in D.C. they're going to run it. Then they're saying they're going to do in New York on Sunday, July 20th. Again, live from 2 to 3 Eastern time. Then they're going to go back down to Charlotte. They've been there before. That'll be July 26th. Detroit, of course, that'll be Motor City. That'll be a big one. That'll be in August. Then the end of August, they've got Daytona, Florida they're going to. Then they're going to L.A. Then they're coming actually up to Seattle, Washington, which to me that means they will be at Dirtfish. I don't know any other place they would do it. Nice. There are a couple of racetracks around the Seattle area, but not many. Dirtfish would be the perfect place to have the combination of gravel and, you know, and tarmac to fit the event. I was there for the inaugural season.
How about that street course from Gran Turismo?
Actually, that's a pretty brilliant street course.
So I don't know it.
No, it's not. It would never be FIA certified.
No, it wouldn't. It definitely wouldn't be. But
it's more of an IndyCar course.
I was going to say the railroad crossing is a bit sketch, man. You got to do it just right.
Yeah.
So they are going to head up to Seattle. I was actually at one of the inaugural. I guess it was technically the second season. No, maybe it was the first season of GRC. I drove all the way up to – well, it wasn't even called Global Rallycross at the time. I drove all the way up to the Dirtfish Rally School for the first time, and I'm not sure if even they were officially a school yet then. And I watched it. I really, really wanted to meet Marcus Granholm, but he was ill. And Andreas Eriksson, who prepares the cars himself for Ford, ended up driving. Nice. But I really wanted to meet Marcus Granholm and didn't get a chance to, so I was kind of bummed about that. But but it'll be nice to see Block and the gang up there in Seattle. And then the final event will be at SEMA again in Las Vegas. So set your DVRs. NBC Sports is the place to be if you want to watch any rally or GRC coverage, it seems. Everything but the WRC, which is on MAV TV, unfortunately. But man, I love the fact that, and this is what I was assuming was going to happen. I had actually predicted this, that when they announced that Rally America was going to be on NBC Sports Network, that we'd have the GRC would also be with NBC in some fashion. Now, granted, this is on the main NBC, not on NBC Sports, but the collaboration there allows. Actually, can you imagine during some of the GRC coverage, you know, some of the breaks in between, they can actually show some coverage of drivers that are doing both events and what they're doing in Rally America to help give exposure to stage rally in addition to GRC, which I think is freaking brilliant.
Some cross promotion.
Damn right.
Yeah, I
agree. What I'm hoping for.
It's a great idea.
And considering, you know, these are, you know, hour-long shows, hour and a half in some cases, I can definitely see that being a possibility.
How does this compare to the Robbie Gordon Stadium truck you've been driving? Anyway.
And then final little bit of news coming out of the GRC or the rally world. This is going to be the World Rallycross Championship. We got good old Jacques Villeneuve is going to be jumping into the World Rallycross Championship.
Can I rephrase that sentence for you? Jacques Villeneuve is going to be irrelevant in the FIA's WRX series.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It has, but it's worth
when
it's worth putting
last,
him in a car.
96.
Is that
when he won his? Well, no, he won the.
Was it 96?
He won the 500 in 95, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he won the World Driving Championship in Formula One the year after.
Mm-hmm.
And did he do anything since?
He signed a couple of contracts that were the end of his career. I hear he's got a singing career and he owns a restaurant.
Oh, gosh.
Ouch.
Above.
Anyway, moving on.
Jacques is going above. To be into the World Rallycross Championship with factory team Peugeot. So that'll be a new thing because Peugeot hasn't been a factory drive with them before. So that'll be great to see at least another manufacturer in the mix as well.
Yeah, I think they picked the wrong jockey.
I think this is the, hey, we're picking somebody that's going to get on people's radar, and then we're going to pick a real driver.
Yeah, you might be very, very correct.
Yeah. It's all about glitz and glamour to get people to tune into your series first, and then after that, you worry about the competition. Right. So, anyway.
Well, that's it for rally coverage, everybody. Sorry for taking up so much time, but there's a lot of stuff to keep the interest going.
Lots of stuff out there. But let's go ahead and move along, actually. We got to talk some sports car here. Sebring, the Tudor guys. We've got the entry list notables. We got Justin Wilson for MSR. I think we still got Bourdais over at Action Express. So we got some great articles up there talking about the testing. Tons actually put up a fantastic piece talking about the BOP changes for the cars and everything that we have going on with the the Tudor Championship going into Sebring. So go over to openpaddock.net, check that out. I won't get too much into it. Also, the Le Mans entry list was announced today, not today, but just the other day, actually. Notables, again, we've got Dempsey Racing. We had Oak Racing with like 1,000 entries into the P2 category. So some great stuff over at Le Mans as well. I hate to take so much time away from sports car. Maybe we can get into it.
I just have one question. Do we really think that the P2 cars are going to be as competitive at Sebring as they were not competitive at the 24-hour at Daytona?
I think it'll be better, not only because of the BOP changes, but because of the fact that there's really only one straightaway where the prototypes are really going to be able to stretch their legs like they have in the past. And so I think that it'll be okay for this time. What I'm interested to see is, you know, we kind of had a pretty reasonable drop off, I think, anyways, of teams. You know, I thought that a lot of the teams we've seen at Daytona obviously are kind of missing in action, and that's kind of a bummer. But, I mean, we still got 42 cars at Sebring. I think the P2 versus Daytona prototype battle will be better, but I guess time will tell. I don't know.
Let me tell you why I think the P2s have a much better shot at Sebring than they did at Daytona. Sebring is a lot twistier than Daytona. And it is
bumpy as hell.
Yes, it is extremely bumpy. And you know, the Daytona prototype cars, it's a traditional I shouldn't even say traditional. It is an antique tube frame chassis. Okay? Whereas the LMP2 is a more traditional current tradition type of racer, monocoque. And with the LMP2s built into the suspension, tooling is what's sometimes called a third front damper. And so what this is, and of course, if I wrote an article about this a while ago, and if you remember, what was it last year that or the year before that I think Penske was called to the carpet about potential cheating, right, with using a third damper at places like Long Beach. And I think that they were technically within the rules, but they were interpreting the rulebook a little more creatively than others. But anyway, what this third damper does is it couples the left and right suspension in such a way that they can work independently. But if they're both experiencing bound or both experiencing rebound, this third damper comes into play to stiffen that up. What this means is it going into a hard braking zone. Normally, when you step on the brakes, the weight is going to transfer to the nose of the car, and your nose is going to pitch downward, right? And so with a DP car, at a ride height like you would have for Daytona, so you're pretty low to the deck. At Sebring, you hit a hard brake zone, and you know you're scraping your front splitter on the tarmac. Instead, to prevent that from happening, you lift the ride height, right, to give the room or give the nose room to do that pitch. Well, the LMP2 cars with that third damper can run at a lower ride height, and when they brake and the weight transfers forward, that third damper comes into play and keeps the nose up. So sometimes it's called an anti-dive system or an anti-dive damper, but anyway, it allows them to run a lower ride height while still managing, you know, the really extreme braking the braking points, and also it allows him to run over these very bumpy terrains where you need a lot of compliance in your suspension. But usually it's one wheel or the other that you know that is acting, and so because of the technical differences between the DPs and the LMP2s, I think the LMP2s really do have more of an advantage at Sebring than they did at Daytona. What has yet to be determined is just how much horsepower is IMSA going to give the DPs at Sebring. Just how keen are they on making darn sure that the DPs remain the top class? I think that's really the question that we should be asking.
How intent are they on cutting their throat?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. You know, I know you guys remember the days of the Penske Porsche Spyders going up against the Audi LMP1 cars. And, you know, you get on a large track and the Audi's just gone. And, you know, on like a street course, it was a knife fight, you know, between the two. And sometimes the Penske's or the Andretti Acuras, LMP2 Acuras, win. I would like to see a return to that type of competition.
Well, we shall see what exactly happens. I look forward to it, obviously, as next, guys. So let's just take a look. Also, quick note, maybe we can get into it a bit more next time. Like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the K-Pax guys are switching from the Volvos to the McLarens in the Pirelli World Challenge GT class. So we got some fantastic cars shaping up in the in that championship. So we've got Ferraris, McLarens now. So really healthy championship, I think. So yes, let us roll on.
One interesting thing on that, yeah, they're going with the McLaren MP412Cs, beautiful cars, definitely an upgrade from those boxy-looking Volvos, at least by appearance. See how they're homologated for racing. The question, though, is, in my mind, Alex Figge and Robert Thorne, where's Randy?
Yeah, sadly.
I've been trolling his Twitter feed. I haven't seen anything. Still trying to figure out what's going on there. So as we find out, we'll let you know. But Randy Popst won several championships with them and was a race winner all through last season as well. So kind of surprised to see his name not attached to this deal. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he's already got something lined up somewhere else in World Challenge. He does have on his website listed the 2014 World Challenge season. He doesn't have it listed with what team. So there's potential that something's yet to be announced, or this was a shot across the bow that he wasn't aware of.
Well,
so,
we're still a month out from the first event.
Indeed.
Indeed,
there's time. It's just kind of surprising that nothing was mentioned in this announcement of him. And teaming in with the McLaren MP412Cs, if you do watch Top Gear this week, you will see a McLaren P1.
Oh,
yeah. Spa.
Yeah, I've got that on the DVR. We've watched only part of it. Haven't seen the whole thing where they show the P1 yet. But oh my god, just seeing that at on display there on the show, I'm just like drooling.
900 horsepower of hybrid madness. So nice little car there. Nice kit. Okay, moving on to Formula One then.
All right.
Some interesting stuff going on. Rumors at this point, so we're not going to get too much into it. But Olivier Kinzel, former team principal at Citroën World Rally Team, is being rumored as Lotus's new team principal. This is according to Autosprint. There's potential that this is true. There's potential that it's totally false. If it's true, we will probably hear an announcement about this week.
I mean, Olivier, he knows how to manage a team real well, that's for sure, but
no doubt.
It's freaking Lotus. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, what do you do with that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got a reasonable foundation, I think. Just a matter of what, you know, you're right, what can you do, you know, in terms of –
You know, but it's hemorrhaging money like that. I mean,
it is hemorrhaging money. It is. But I don't think that Canell would consider it, given his stature, if there wasn't something. You know, if it is true that he's considering it, I don't think that he would consider it unless there was something substantial that, like, you know, something in the business model that he enjoys and thinks will be worthwhile. I can only assume.
Good point. Yeah. Yep. He's a smart guy. So,
Deedly-do.
We will see if that's true. Other rumors were that Martin Whitmarsh was going to take that role. So at this point, that is up to question. Martin Whitmarsh currently, or at least in the past, was the lead guy in the Teams Association, the Formula One Teams Association. And rumors are that that organization is about to completely fail because teams aren't paying their dues, and they don't currently have a president because Martin Whitmarsh is not associated with the team. moving into this week, starting tomorrow, is testing at Bahrain. Coming out of the previous test, of course, we had the issues with Red Bull and the Renault, and Adrian Newey has chalked that up in two directions. He said that the aggressive packaging of the rear end, you know, the jigsaw puzzle that is trying to condense that rear end as tightly as possible for aerodynamic efficiency, as well as while allowing for cooling, they think they may have got that wrong, and he said that the lack of time that they had allotted for getting that all together also contributed to that issue. What it just sounds like is they were behind in their production schedule and didn't have a real opportunity to put this car on a dyno before they took it out to the track. It may speak to how sweeping these rules changes were for the season and the continued issues of the FIA. Hey, maybe we'll change these rules with 3 months before the season and all that kind of stuff. Seems to be an issue, but all is not well. I mean, the Lotus filming day test supposedly was Renault's chance to say, hey, everything's fine. Well, Toro Rosso also did a filming day test, and they had multiple stops throughout the day because of engine issues and cooling issues. So either you chalk this up to Toro Rosso and Red Bull design their cars incorrectly the same, or Lotus had the inside track on the information since they used to be the manufacturer team, or there really was kind of some smoke and mirrors going on that Lotus test, and we will find out tomorrow exactly what has been done, because at this point we've got the testing starting tomorrow.
And the 2014 season ends up being decided by who does best attrition management.
It may very well be, but that makes it an engineering competition, and I'm excited about that.
I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah.
It will make it more interesting for sure. I might actually watch them F1 then.
some minor quality tweaks coming into 2014. Q3 is going to be changed a little bit. You are going to be given a new set of tires for Q3. You will start the race on the tires you finished Q2 in.
Mm.
And you will be given a quality set for Q3. You must take laps in Q3.
Excellent.
And they're talking about lengthening Q3 a bit.
I'd say maybe 5 minutes.
They're going to go to 12 minutes for Q3 and take 2 minutes from Q1.
Right on.
Whatever.
Right on. Whatever. It works. So.
So that's a good solution. Short of going back to a 1 hour free for all, which I at this point, you know, I do like the knockout qualifying, but I think I still prefer the old 1 hour system. Yeah, just me. Pirelli is going to be using some of this upcoming test to test 2015 tires. They're looking at some compounds for 2015 because in 2015 they will be banning tire warmers. Oh, that's going to be fun.
That'll be interesting.
But they're going to take some time to test certain compounds and make sure that they don't come out there with blocks of ice on the wheels at Melbourne in 2015. So
that'll be interesting when they first come out of the pits.
I'll be interesting on the starting grid.
Yes.
Oh, that's good point.
Yeah. Either, you know, both places, but especially, you know, as Mr. Shaw pointed out, coming out of the pits, that first lap.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're going to see, I think you're going to see car control come much more to the fore than it has been in recent years, where you're coming out on nearly full warm tires.
Yeah, and you know, we see people merge into the racing line from that turn one, you know, exit from the pits, and they merge into the racing line. They cut somebody off, and then that person ends up not being able to pass them for the entire lap.
Right. Yeah, that's it. They keep their position.
So in my mind, this is just as beneficial to the teams as beneficial to the show as maybe a DRS system is, because it does create passing when you have a guy on cold tires and a guy on hot tires.
Yep. Yep.
So
yep.
That'll be fun to see. Fun to see. Also, look for Williams at this next test. It sounds like they have been able to secure Martini as a sponsor.
Yeah.
This harkens back to, you know, a long relationship with Martini. I mean, back in the 70s with the, you know, title wins and everything like that, with the white livery, with the blue and red and baby blue Martini logo all over the car. So that could be kind of cool. It'll be a little bit of a heritage play for Williams if it indeed does come to fruition. But it sounds like it totally is. It's just a matter of being announced at this point. And again, Wednesday or tomorrow, when they start the testing, we'll probably see this livery.
I look forward to it.
So that is a brief hurdle through the world of F1. Good to see that testing resumes, and tomorrow is going to be so much fun as we listen to the reports about that Renault engine. I am so curious.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see if they can actually survive long
three
enough,
laps.
So, yeah.
So how many grenades do you think we're going to see?
I don't know. Time will tell.
Melbourne's going to be just fantastic. It's just going to be fantastic because
I don't think you'll see so much grenades as you'll see like thermonuclear meltdowns.
Well, and some of the discussion is really going key on fuel. You know, some of the articles I've seen is talking about Ferrari system where they're completely shutting sparking of the engine down and letting the battery system run maybe at top end of the, you know, top speed, you know, cutting out cylinders and not sparking or various things like that to save fuel. Then also Ferrari has some very unique cooling designs on their side pods to where they think they can get by with much smaller air entry. Again, we'll wait and see on that. Mm-hmm. But if they are able to do these fuel-saving designs, that allows them to turn up the wick as much as possible. As much as the FIA mandated fuel flow regulator allows.
Right. Exactly.
Tick, 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 boom.
But true. But the other side of that is the teams that haven't quite got it right, the manufacturers who haven't got it right on the fuel delivery issue are going to be having to dial it back. And it's going to hurt their lap times. So we shall see. Going to be crazy.
Indeed. Well, Pirelli will be happy because nobody will be blaming them. They'll be blaming Renault and the engine manufacturers. So
indeed.
And questionably shaped noses.
Yes, always.
There's so much. Pirelli is loving these new car designs.
Yeah.
We're just over here making the tires. Don't mind us.
Yeah, it takes attention away from them.
All right. Well, that should be all we got, right?
Yeah, that is.
It is. I was going to make one last comment. Sebastian Loeb actually joined Twitter officially for the first time just yesterday.
Oh, nice.
In one day, 26,000 plus followers.
Boom.
Dude, he's competing with me.
Right on.
After about 3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in 3 seconds he had like 400 followers or something like that.
In 1.5 seconds.
All right. Well, we'd like to, again, special thanks to Martin coming on the show tonight and interviewing. Best of luck to him. And that's all we really have for you this week. So we will be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Hopefully all the boys will be back from the 100 Acre Wood Rally. So hopefully nothing too terrible or tragic happens. But we'll certainly look forward to hearing from you guys coming back from the event. So on that note, we will sign off for the week. So thanks so much, everybody. Have a great week, and we will talk to you here soon.